Hare Krishna. I'm now in Hungary, and I just wanted to continue the second part of that detailed report on my experience in the hospital. I'd already recorded when I was in Lechmore Heath with some devotees about the anatomical aspect of what had happened. I think I went into quite detail, and the actual events in more detail as to the day-by-day events. Of course, I can't put them all in, but as much as possible. And then sort of briefer, because we started running out of time, I was mentioning some of my experiences at the hospital, my prayers, and the response and protection that I felt I was getting from Krishna, more specifically from Radhisham Sundar. And how I ultimately saw my hospital room as being my bhajan kuti. It was a place where ultimately I was doing bhajan. It was an intense experience of Shravan Bhajatejoman. It was an intense experience of being absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. And some of the dreams that I had, my meditations on the garden outside, forest outside, really, and the event itself, the different pains and discomforts and procedures and all of those were really different impetus, udipan, for remembering Krishna. That, well, either it was remember the Lord or to just get absorbed in the problems that those situations or conditions posed. And so it was just that, and that helped me to come to certain realizations. Being in that bhajan kirti helped me come to some realizations, and now I was going to mention that aspect of the whole experience, and that was some of the realizations that I had, both from a Krishna conscious point of view, from a medical point of view, and direction that I feel I need to sort of plan for in the future, and not being in a exclusive situation of getting old and suffering with infirmities, something that the devotees may also find helpful. So now that's what I'm going to start with. I'd already mentioned in the podcast a couple of times that my constant and overriding meditation was Tattenukampam Shushamikshamano. This is my fate. Krishna is giving me the reactions of my past activities to help purify me, and Mukti Padidayabak. And my real measure of Krishna consciousness is how much I'm going to see this all as Krishna's mercy. Not that Krishna's mercy just comes in the form of dreams or in prasadam or in blissful kirtans, but Krishna's mercy also comes in this way. And accept it and also continue because it's a different type of sukha dukkha. It's the dukkha part, which may be more of a test, and continue to think of Krishna and remember Krishna, depend on Krishna through whatever may happen. And so I would chant that verse a lot. I would meditate on it, meanings that it means. It's an important verse. It's a verse Srila Prabhupada quotes. It's brought up in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that Advaita Acharya wanted to change the Muktipad to Bhaktipad. But it's clear that if we really want to advance in Krishna consciousness, if we want to be accepted by Krishna, if we want to enter into the spiritual world, if we want an invitation to enter into the spiritual world, if we want really to become devotees, Vaishnavas, we need to accept our own past. We need to take responsibility for our past deeds, and the idea that, oh, well, I'm a devotee, so now Krishna is going to free me from these past deeds, and I'm not going to have to suffer in this material world. That's not what Krishna consciousness is about. That's a desire for liberation. Vaishnavas don't aspire for liberation. Of course, aham tvam sarvapapebhyo, yes, Krishna, if we were to suffer for all of our past sinful activities, then we're going to be here in the material world for a long, long, long time. And that doesn't harmonize with Srila Prabhupada's encouragement and promise to go back home, back to Godhead in one life. So yes, Krishna is giving us Krishna karma. He's giving us some karma. But as Prabhupada would use the word, it's a token. It's just a little sampling. But we need to accept that sampling. And not only just accept it, but when it comes, we need to see, now Krishna's diminishing my results of my sinful activities. Now I'm suffering, but actually I should be suffering a million times more. And the fact that Krishna's giving me a little suffering means that actually he's not giving me a little suffering. He's freeing me from 99.99% of my suffering. So how fortunate I am. It sounds good in words, but it's something that we need to apply. And the fact is that it will happen to you. Srila Prabhupada said, don't think this won't happen to you. It will happen to all of us. All of us will be in similar situations throughout our lives and then at the time of death, and how we cope with our past, accepting our past, accepting the results of our deeds, not trying to think that we have some right to be aloof from those, that will determine the real caliber of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. I'd mentioned before that, so aside from one isolated incident, my personal experience was not with pain at this time. It was with other types of discomfort, which were really, well, I would say, equally distressful and equally disturbing. Nausea, dizziness, and so on. And yeah, sometimes I thought, boy, dying is better than this. Another aspect which I personally experienced in the hospital were the multiple things that happened altogether. It had me in sort of a state of apprehension when I was thinking, what next? Okay, first I go in for a little procedure, and then as a result of that, I get kidney failure, and then I go deaf on one ear, and then I can't see with another one, and then I have another hernia. And these were like coming one after another, so it it was very instructive. It was instructive in the sense that Krishna wasn't just giving a one-off, but there were 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there were also other things that didn't particularly happen, but could have happened, or were potentials, or even that some things the doctors wanted to do, like spinal taps and other things like that. But neither I nor Sundarana thought that they were necessary. I wasn't going to go there at that time. And the other aspect that where things really were tested was not just the physical, but then there was also the psychological. I think I mentioned on the other talk that more or less in the month that I was in the hospital, I sort of barely slept. And I don't believe in people sleeping in hospitals, so that's part of a part of recuperating. And in fact, actually, since after the hospital, I didn't sleep. I'm just now starting to get into a routine where I don't have to get up 6, 7, 8 times a night. But anyway, that was a very interesting thing to not only just see how I would cope with the different physical anatomical things that were coming along, but psychologically. For instance, one was psychologically would be number of these things, the frequency of these things that were coming is one after the other. And, you know, is it going to stop, or where is it all leading to? The other was the fast rate at which my kidney functions were deteriorating. I just say the creatinine level was going up and up, and then and it was like a daily thing. Take a blood test. At that time, I was getting a blood test twice a day, and they were taking blood twice a day, and then seeing where the creatinine level was, and as it was going up, then I was sort of getting nearer and nearer to what the doctor said. Well, if this hits 600 level, then you have to have dialysis. And I was thinking, boy, is that Krishna have that in plan for me? But anyway, it wasn't the dialysis, which I'd already mentioned earlier, which fortunately didn't end up happening. But the fact that the psychological effect, every day it's going up, and then of course everyone's saying either Shambhihari is there or another Chaitanya, well, sure, tomorrow it'll come down, and also the doctors, but tomorrow it didn't come down, it just kept going up. And then at a certain point it peaked, thank goodness it peaked just before 600, and then it started coming down. But it came down very slowly. But right to this very day, it still hasn't come down. To its normal level, and I feel different things or symptoms of that. Therefore, when the Buddhists ask, "Am I okay?" Is, you know, back to normal? Not back to normal. I'm not okay, even though I may have a bit of a suntan from sitting out in the garden when the sun was shining in London. Not only was the creatinine coming down slowly, but sometimes it would come down, and then sometimes it would stop coming down. And then my kidney doctor would come and say horrible things like, you know, if your kidneys don't come down any further, then we're going to have to stick a needle in them and start doing a biopsy. And of course, that wasn't a good thing to meditate on. And then sometimes it would go up, and sometimes it would level off, and then once again it would come down. And so one's living with this day-to-day expectation and hope it was intense. Another psychological phenomena was being in a room for a month. It was a nice room, a very nice room by hospital standards, private room. But still, I was in a room, and for the first 2 weeks, it was freezing cold out in the corridor. It was a good thing I was able to bring my own heaters in there, keep things warm. So being confined to one space, and of course when I was very, very dizzy, I couldn't really walk very much, although I didn't stay in bed, but I sat or I tried to walk around, but still staying in one space, it was quite stressful, and never knowing when someone's going to knock on the door to come in to take a blood test, when they're going to come in to take the blood pressure, when they're going to come in to give some type of medicine, when some doctor who they really think that they have access to your life at any time of the day, when they're going to walk in morning, noon, or night, and want to start talking and asking how you are and so on. So it was it was intense, and that's also comes along with it. And it really made me appreciate people who have health issues, serious health issues, people who have, cancer or terminal cancer, or have replace organs, or others who are amputees. You have to be brave, and there has to be a certain degree of braveness over there. And I was appreciative of that. I would think, well, there's so many people around the world who are living a much more living or dying around the world in much more difficult circumstances than I am, and they don't even have Krishna consciousness, and they're dealing with all these things. So those were good thoughts. Those were good. Good experiences, and that was part of the psychological pressure of being there. One very important thing that I learned, which I could have practiced right from the very beginning, but actually the first 2 days I really wasn't well enough and didn't have I wasn't able to think well enough at that time. Otherwise, I may have protested against doing the original CT scan, which compounded my kidney situation. And the importance of devotees really being aware of what's happening and taking place. In other words, just handing yourself over to doctors and letting doctors do whatever they want, that's fine, but that's a decision. And then once you make that decision, they have their own way. For the most part, allopathic doctors have their allopathic ways, which is based on surgery and medication and the modern medical system. It doesn't take into account any alternatives, and sometimes it doesn't take into account waiting. So not that I have any complaints about any of the doctors, because really I think that Sunananda Prabhu arranged that I had really the best consultants in the UK, which means that they were sort of the best in their field in the world. But nonetheless, they have a certain methodology, and when we hand ourselves over to them, then we hand ourselves over to that methodology. Devotees or people, individuals, patients have free will. They have rights. They can have a say as to what they want to enter, what type of procedure they want to enter, at what time not. We'll give two examples. For instance, one was where we're still because the doctors were very puzzled why all my other electrolytes, functions of the kidney, were all normal except for this creatinine, and why it was coming down so slowly. And there's no way for them to find out doing a biopsy, but wanted to do a MRA to see how whether there was proper blood, what were the blood vessels leading to the kidneys. Was the kid getting enough blood, or were those blood vessels hardened, or were they obstructed in some way? So for that, they had to do another CT scan. I had probably about 6 CT scans and a couple of MRI scans. I was constantly on the move. Not on the move, usually they'd move me in a wheelchair, but I was always going from one department to another. And that was part of the really excellent treatment and concern that Sundarananda was arranging. But anyway, this again required a contrast. Contrast is what they inject into you so that they can actually see better. And to make a long story short, although that contrast was not supposed to be harmful in any way to the kidneys, still I did some. I said, all right, let me do research. I did my own research. I found that potentially could be harmful, especially for someone who's already a kidney patient, which I was at that time. And so they said no. And the result of that was that they found actually another hospital. I had to go to another hospital where they're able to actually do that MRA, and they had a system where they could actually read the scan what they saw without a contrast. Had I not objected, maybe nothing would have happened, but at least I was more assured. And in fact, even when we went there and I sat down, and that was the Royal Mary Hospital, which was downtown, and the radiologist came up. He says, okay, so we're going to first inject you with a contrast. I said, no, you're not. I'll just look on this paper. It says no contrast. And he said, all right. And then I did it without the contrast. So in other words, devotees need to be aware that we need to be very clear of what they're getting into and what the potential ramifications are. Another example was my ear condition, for which is I had experienced once before because I had somewhat of a cold in the hospital, and I guess doctors explained that the liquid drained into my middle ear, and again, it wasn't really painful, it was a little uncomfortable, but I really couldn't hear from my left ear. What to speak of when I got out of hospital, when I was talking, then it was like having a loudspeaker on the left side of my head. And what to speak of when I got out of hospital and I tried singing, it was the people who were sitting left of me, I couldn't hear what they were doing, and the people to the right, they seemed inordinately loud. And so once again, we went to the specialist and went a couple of times, and we were waiting, and there's no cure, no allopathic cure. The only cure is to puncture the eardrum and drain the water, or even put in a grommet to regularly drain the water. But I had that experience once before, about 20 years back, and as a result of that, although actually the result of that, I have tinnitus. So I told the doctor, can you guarantee me my tinnitus isn't going to get worse? Mine is relatively minor. And it's only when I talk about it and I hear it now. Still, what if it gets worse? And some people really, really suffer with this ringing. So I said, no, I can't guarantee that. Okay, so I said, I'm just going to wait and see if it just sort of dries up on its own. Well, when we got back, I got on the internet and I started looking for alternate solutions. And I'm sure probably a good portion of the alternate solutions I read weren't very good. In fact, we did the lookup on certain medication, and some had some other bad side effects and so on, so it never took those. But one thing I did find was an ear popper. You're listening to my ear popper. And it's very, very simple. It just pumps air. And all you have to do is you put it in your left nostril and you swallow. And you hold your right nostril closed. And what it does is it seems that when you swallow, then there's a channel that opens up. And only at that time it opens up between the ear and the nose. And this blows air in, it equalizes the pressure, and gradually it pushes out the water. So within 3 days, I got back 90% of my hearing, and this has been like, you know, a little over a week. And I'd say that, you know, more or less I'm cured. Although I'm still going to continue using it for another few weeks. So once again, if I didn't, either I'd be sitting there with a condition, or I'd subject myself possibly to another operation, which could possibly have serious side effects. So, of course, this is the consideration for health issues. But a similar question comes up is, and I've done podcasts on this before, is what happens at the time of death? Where are we going to draw the line? What are going to be our decisions? Do we keep going to hospitals ad infinitum and try all kinds of medication? Or at a certain point, do we just say, okay, that's it, now we depend on Krishna? And that's the very delicate balance in all of this. Depending on Krishna, and at the same time, taking all of this type of assistance. Krishna also gives us intelligence. I think he gives the intelligence to say no to a contrast, to other things that I sort of negotiated on with doctors, to look for this sort of ear popper and do that. And ultimately to establish, well, at what conditions do we really sort of draw the line and say no more? Devotees need to make decision when they go into a hospital. Do you want to leave your body in a hospital? When you leave a hospital, then that's a real act of bravery, because you can't get all the treatment that you get there. And one may be faced with conditions of pain, discomfort, and so on. Once again, I have experience with this medical condition, practical experience now. I've yet to have the practical experience at the time of death, but it's certainly something that one needs to prepare oneself for. And that was the purpose of this more sort of detailed podcast, is that I really feel that there's a need. Is that there's a need to prepare, to psychologically prepare, to think things out, to discuss these things in detail. It was, when I was there, I thought many times of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada came to the manor. He had a condition, not like mine, but anyway, somewhat similar. He went to the hospital. When he went to the hospital, the doctor realized that Prabhupada only had half a kidney working. He said, "We'd like you to stay here, you know, to do some tests and do some other things." And Prabhupada said, "No." He wanted to go back to Vrindavan. Now, that's a very, very, very brave thing to do, and just depend on Krishna. There are no doctors, there's no hospital. Prabhupada had no intention of going into a hospital. And he was dependent upon disciples who had zero or very little medical experience. But Srila Prabhupada realized, well, if I don't do something about this, and Prabhupada had said that along the way, I don't think there's any cure for this. So ultimately, he dealt with also kidney failure. But Prabhupada was willing to accept that, and he didn't want to compromise that in any way, either to extend his life, Shukadeva Goswami also says, Ayur Harati Vai Pungsam, that ultimately one must be brave enough to call off attachments to this world. So this principle of pure devotional service, which means complete dependence on Krishna, and how to keep the balance of being completely dependent on Krishna and at the same time taking advantage of medical assistance through our life, and at the same time at the end of our life without actually compromising, that now I'm depending just on the doctors rather than depending on Krishna. And of course, no matter how much we depend on doctors, they're not going to keep us alive. At a certain point, we have to leave this body. And in that sense, devotees have an advantage. They know that there is a much better life that awaits them beyond this one. So death is not such a big issue. In fact, death may be a real relief. But that type of thinking and that psychology and that preparedness will only come if one actually really takes advantage of this lifetime to prepare for it. I could say some more things, but I think I've sort of said most of the things I wanted to say, and this is already running into half an hour, so it's quite a long podcast by comparison to others. But I wanted to share some of those thoughts. There's a lot to be said about this. I discussed with some of my godbrothers the need to discuss these things, not put them off and not just have last-minute reaction, because that's what Krishna consciousness is about. It's about preparation. We're preparing for so many things, but ultimately we need to prepare for the reverses of material life and also ultimately leaving this world behind. So that's it, and Hare Krishna.